A group of American elites are in secret societies, one in which is called Shabtai, and its mission is to groom the future leaders of the Jewish people. But this is not a group of Jewish people. This is a group of American leaders, many of them not Jewish. There are lawmakers from both sides known to be members, Cory Booker and Vivek Ramaswamy, to name a few, as well as influencers like Michael Knowles and perhaps J.D. Vance. We're going to explore that in a minute. Now, this club has links to Palantir and Jeffrey Epstein. It's like an elitist bingo. Epstein, check. Alliance to Israel, check. Secret power structures, elite universities, check and check. Well, Kim Iverson did a report on this recently, and my jaw was on the floor. Please look it up and share it yourself. And if you're not subscribed to the Kim Iverson Show, well, I don't know why. So we asked her to tell us about this herself. She joins us today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. Yes, it's been a pleasure. It's been too long. Now,
yes.
Tell me about how you became aware of Shabtai and, like, you know, high level, what it is.
Well, I have a great team of researchers working on my show, and we kind of thought, you know, let's look into secret societies. We all know about Skull and Bones, but what other secret societies are out there? And it turns out that there's quite a few, Shabtai being one that is very much a secret society. They announce themselves. They're not so secret that we don't know they exist. We know they exist. We have an idea of some of their members, just the ones that have been publicly announced. But essentially, these secret societies, what's important about them, and I think what made myself and those who work on my show interested in these secret societies, is the fact that they're often born in these universities, right? High-level universities, elite universities. And a lot of these students end up becoming the leaders of the world, or the country at least. And when they rub elbows together and they're in these groups and clubs together, that might seem innocent at first when they're just college students. But then when they get older and they become people in positions of power, a big question is, who do they know and who do they associate with? And what kinds of discussions are they having outside of the public spotlight? What types of things are they plotting? I mean, these are the people who have power. So these secret societies are really important because we know that they groom, I would say, the future leaders by, you know, who you know often is how you end up getting more powerful positions. So maybe not necessarily, I mean, we could probably debate this all day, necessarily like political office, although I don't know, maybe that is more about who you know as well, rather than just people voting. But certainly people that end up in positions, you know, CEOs of big companies, and those companies, of course, do donate to the political campaigns and do have a massive amount of political sway. So it's really important we know who the leaders who are running things, who they associate with, and what it is they believe. And these secret societies really kind of give us at least a little bit of insight into what they might be planning and plotting.
Right, because some of these people are either elected officials or have sought to be elected officials. Some of them are ambassadors. Some of them are global leaders. And, you know, if they are asking for our votes, we should know their motivation. That's the whole point of campaigning, is who are you? What are you about? What's your religion? What's your belief system? And then if there's this sort of secret influence over them, it matters a lot, because what they're telling us publicly may not be who they are privately. And so if there is this association that is trying to groom leaders for an allegiance to Israel, we need to understand that, because it may be woven through our leadership constantly, right?
Well, and the fact that they, I mean, it is really weird, right, for people, for grown men to get, and women to get together and be like, okay, let's form a secret society. What are we going to call it? And I don't know, do they have a secret handshake? You know, it's just like a very, rather than just groups of people who happen to know each other and they just get together for dinner. I mean, we all have friends like that, right? Where we have a group maybe, and every so often we call them up. I mean, you know, I have friends from college, and maybe once in a while we'll get together and hang out or something, but we don't call it a secret society. I mean, that is where it gets, or we don't even call it a name. We don't have, I mean, maybe, you know, sometimes there'll be like a funny name, like, oh, you know, Bad Bitches Working Out Club.
Sure.
Know, something
I have a group called IH3K, right, which is I have three kids.
So like, there you go.
We're
you
know, all something, up to here.
Something yeah. like that, which is just, you know, it's, but that's, those are funny. Those are not secret societies. The fact that these people get together and they even think it's not just, oh, we're just people who have like-minded interests that want to get together and talk or have coffee or have drinks or have dinners, but instead to form an actual society. I mean, it does seem a little cultish, to be quite honest.
We're going to take a break from this interview while I tell you about our friends at Lear Capital. Have you ever looked at one of the big investments of the day and thought, oh, I wish I'd got in on that sooner? Maybe it was AI, maybe it was SpaceX or Micron. By the time everyone's talking about it, the big gains have already happened. But what if the next opportunity isn't the headline, it's what's making those headlines possible? Of course, I'm talking about silver. Silver is a critical material behind the AI revolution. It's used in the technology that powers data centers, advanced electronics, robotics, and of course the infrastructure that AI is built on. And if AI keeps growing the way it's supposed to, which we all think it will, then the demand for silver could grow right along with it. But here's the thing, you don't want to be learning about this after everyone catches on, because of course silver's price is predicted to grow to $150 an ounce. That's why we want you to get in on Lear Capital's free report called The AI Revolution. It explains why so many investors are taking a closer look at silver and what could be the driving demand behind it. So all you have to do is text the word news, N-E-W-S, to 43343 to get your free copy. It's quick, it's easy. You'll get it in your text. Again, text the word news, 43343. Don't miss out on learning how to capitalize on the next revolution. Make your money work for you. Again, text the word news, 43343. So Shabtai, then, you say, was founded, co-founded with Ben Karp, who is the brother of Alex Karp, who owns Palantir, in the 90s. Tell us a little bit more about its founding and its purpose.
Yeah, so Rabbi Shmuley Hecht, so not the Rabbi Shmuley we all know, but a different Rabbi Shmuley Hecht, he founded the organization with Ben Karp, and he also founded the organization with Cory Booker, which I find very interesting, because Cory doesn't publicly say he's Jewish, but I believe he did have a Jewish wedding. I want to say that when he recently got married, he at least had Jewish aspects of his wedding, and he certainly does seem to celebrate Jewish holidays. And that's important because Rabbi Shmuley Hecht, when he started the organization, at his goal was, I'm going to go to Yale and I'm going to spread Judaism. That was actually his mission, his goal at the time. So it's interesting then that Alex Karp's brother, who is Jewish, gets in and is a founder of this organization along with Cory Booker, which is odd to me, unless Cory Booker has secretly converted to Judaism and he's publicly not admitting that, which may be the case, or maybe he's not fully converted, or maybe he can't really fully convert because it's really difficult to do. So maybe he's like wants to, but can't, that kind of a thing. But it is kind of weird. But Rabbi Hecht essentially starts this organization. They at first meet in kind of a room at Yale. The organization grows. And here's the thing. We don't know the members. We don't know who the members are. We only know the members that the organization has allowed us to know. So they've said Rabbi Hecht started the organization with Ben Karp and with Cory Booker. We know that because they say that on their website. Otherwise, we don't know who the rest of the people are, but we know it grows so big that they're no longer able to just be in a room on campus or near campus. They have to actually go and they need a larger place in order to accommodate them. So a guy named Benny Shabtai, who's an Israeli-American businessman, he financed the society by purchasing property for them to meet. And one was like, started off with kind of a smaller place, and then he ultimately, I think, bought them a larger place. So they've named the organization after him because he was like the main big donor to the organization. So he got his name, you know, on the organization. That's how that works. But he is in investments with Israeli technology, defense-related industries. So he served on the board, for example, the Friends of Israeli Defense Forces. He had a documented friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. And he's the one who's funded this organization that their goal was to first spread Judaism, but then the Rabbi Hecht shifted the goal, and it was more to groom the future leaders of the Jewish people. But then the question is, what does that mean exactly? Future leaders of the Jewish people, like who do they think are the Jewish people? Where are these Jewish people? And it's pretty clear that that seems to be Israel is the what they're really referring to.
Right. So what purpose would Cory Booker serve to that end? He doesn't serve just the Jewish people. He serves the state of New Jersey.
Supposed to.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there are a lot of Jewish people in New Jersey, but you wouldn't think that this would be his number one priority. So that would make us think that his lawmaking is motivated by whatever benefits Israel.
Right. Especially if he has a deep religious affiliation. You know, if he feels like there's some sort of a, you know, and I think we see that even with the Christian Zionists, right? So anybody who has a religious worldview, a religious viewpoint of, you know, these certain events must happen before, you know, Christ can return for the second coming or something like that, they're going to serve that first. And that's what every religious person says. You know, anybody who's elected to any, and you know, Americans freak out about this all the time when it comes to Muslims. They don't seem to freak out about it as much when it comes to Jews or Christians. Although I think, you know, anybody should be scrutinized. Any religion, if a person goes into public office, we should be looking at their religion if they're very devout, because that devout religion will absolutely bleed into their decision making. And so it's fair, you know, to ask the questions, what is it you actually believe? And if you're a Christian Zionist, you believe that if you're really more of the evangelical wing, right? So if you end up being a Christian Zionist, you actually believe religiously that physically the Jews have to return to Jerusalem in order for the second coming of Jesus Christ to be triggered. And they really, that to them is number one. You know, when you ask them, you know, what is your order of importance? They always say God first and then family and then country, right? Okay, great, fair enough. I'm not blaming you for that. But then I want to know, what do you think your God wants? Because right. Whatever you think, whatever your God wants is what you're going to be imposing on us, because we come third. The people are third on the list. They're saying God, family, country. Well, we're third on that list. So what do you think God wants you to do? And so that's, I think, really important when you've got a rabbi that says, I'm going to Yale to spread a religious viewpoint. There's many forms and beliefs inside of Judaism, just like inside of Christianity or inside of Islam. The big question is, well, what kind of teachings are you teaching? Why do you need a secret society to do it?
Right.
Another big question. And who are these people that are getting involved? And what is it the purpose? What is the religious higher purpose that you're telling each other in this secret society that you're trying to usher in? Otherwise, why have a secret society at all?
Right. And you can forgive them, maybe. I mean, this is the 90s, right, that we're talking about. And they're young college students at the time, and maybe you're invited somewhere where you're like, we're going to talk about anti-Semitism and, you know, representing Jewish people. And you might think, that sounds nice. And, you know, a dinner, sure, fine. And then you sort of think about, yes, the plight of the Jews. I'm taught this all the time in academia. I definitely am against the Holocaust. So I will come and talk about these types of things. I mean, I was a reporter in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area for the SF Chronicle, or no, I wasn't with the Chronicle. I was with, the Examiner. And so constantly I was invited to Jewish business events, you know, because that's sort of the kind of thing that you would cover. And in fact, Netanyahu spoke at one of them when I went to in Palo Alto. And so, you know, the conversation is, of course, you know, Jewish people are oppressed. You're against that. Here are the kinds of things that we talk about, you know, to elevate Jewish people, and there's nothing wrong with that. And you're like, okay, fine, right? But now that Cory Booker has power, and all of these years later, can he see what it means to be in a secret society, to be intellectually co-opted, and has he done anything that would tell us that he can think independently? And that answer is no.
Right. Well, and especially, like I said, the fact that, you know, somebody, he claims to not be Jewish, but he had aspects of his wedding that were Jewish, if not a completely Jewish wedding. I'm not 100, but it's really confusing to me whenever I see him and he's, it's like, is he or is he not? I'm not really sure. And the fact that he's not even forthcoming about that necessarily, and in the secret society is extra suspicious. It's like, okay, so then why not just, I don't understand the need for a secret society. If there's nothing nefarious or some, if you don't have some, and even if they don't think it's nefarious, right? Because of course, people that are in their societies, they think they're doing the right thing, whatever that right thing is. But whatever your right thing is, why do you need a secret society in order to pull off whatever the right thing is you think you're doing? The only reason why you'd want a secret society is because you think that your agenda won't be well received by the masses. And so you have to create this alternative society. And then it could be even one of those things where they're just encouraging Corey, like, yeah, don't admit that you've converted completely, like still say that you're, you know, ingratiate yourself with the Christians, but then be part of this secret society that he's a founder of. I mean, it's not just that Corey got sucked into it, you know, as a young college kid and he just joined the secret society. He's one of the freaking founders of this. So, you know, what is this? Is this like a gaslighting, like tell all of your, you know, make your constituents believe that you're, you know, you're this guy that's actually a Christian guy, that you're an American, that you're going to be voting in the best interest of Americans. But then you're in this secret society. You're doing things that make us wonder if you're really truly Christian, which is fine. You know, I have nothing against him converting to whatever religion he wants. I just think, why hide it? Why not be forthcoming about your true agenda, whatever that agenda is? And if your allegiance is to leading the Jewish people because you're part of the Jewish people now and you believe the Jewish people belong in Israel, for example, and you're really going to do everything you can to build the state of Israel, again, we deserve as the voters to know that information, but it's a secret society for this reason.
Right. And nowadays, you would think the optics of joining secret societies are pretty bad. Like, even a college student in the year 2026 might think twice about doing something like that, even if it's a fancy dinner. But the idea that you leave your phone out, there's no published website or membership, and you are a member for life, that is absolutely cultish behavior that is frowned upon now that we understand what happens because of the Epstein files in elitist circles.
Right.
Right?
Right. Yeah, and the fact that, you know, you've got like Michael Knowles now, you know, he's been named as somebody involved. Vivek Ramaswamy is also somebody named as being members. And again, you know, declared non-Jewish. I just think that part of it is a bit weird. I think it's okay. Michael Knowles in particular, that one I don't understand because he's declared Catholic.
Yes.
But Catholics are not, they're not dispensationalists. They do not believe that the Jewish people need to physically return to Israel, to the land of Israel, in order for the second coming to happen. So there is no good, it's just like with RFK Jr., there's no good real reason, you know, for to explain his devotion to Israel. Catholics just shouldn't have that devotion. I mean, you see the Pope talking, you know, the way the Pope speaks all the time. So it is a very strange thing. And it does make me even more suspicious about these secret societies, because then, of course, I go down, you know, my brain goes, well, then is Michael Knowles really truly a Catholic? Or is this like a gaslighting? And the reason I say that is because Israeli Americans, those who hold dual citizenship, are encouraged to continue holding their dual citizenship. They are actively encouraged to never give up their American citizenship. And they're actively aided in when Americans who make aliyah to Israel, when they do that and they have children in Israel, their children are actually, they're qualified to become American citizens because they're born technically to American citizens, even though their parents are dual nationals, right?
Yeah.
And Israel actually sets up the path to make it extremely easy to ensure that your children get that American passport and become Americans. And they do this, obviously, to be able to continue influencing American politics, right? It's don't give up this dual citizenship. We need you to be an American. You need to be over there influencing American politics. So then I get suspicious and I think, well, does that attitude bleed over into like religion, for example, where one person would say, no, I'm a Christian. Christian voters, vote for me. You know that you're only going to get the votes in your constituency, you know, in your area if you say you're a Christian, or it's better for you to claim to be a Catholic or something. But then deep down, you're really not. Deep down, you've converted, but you're hiding the conversion because you're leading the people to your grand purpose that your secret society says is the big purpose that everybody should be aiming toward. You know, I mean, right. Why wouldn't I think like that? Why wouldn't I wonder if Michael Knowles is actually Catholic or if he's actually converted, if he's part of the secret society and he's leading everybody in the direction he wants them to be in and he's pretending to be a Catholic? I think it's a fair question when you find out they're in these secret societies that are built to lead this particular one, built to lead the Jewish people. Well,
right. But there has been rabbinical influence in the Catholic Church for decades, if not hundreds of years, you know, and that has split the factions. There are some that say that even Vatican II was influenced by some. So that wouldn't be new or unusual. But yes, it's an interesting question because what this person, and I don't know Michael Knowles, but what we're forced to ask ourselves is what he represents online, his voice, his message. Is there something there that's influenced by something else that I don't see? And then you have to constantly be asking how you metabolize the messaging of people that you may follow or like or what have you. Vivek Ramaswamy, that's an odd one, right? But yes, he went to Yale. He went to Yale with J.D. Vance, so we're not sure if the both of them were secret society buddies. We just don't know. We have interviewed Vivek Ramaswamy during the primaries, and it was right around October 7th and the beginning of the war on Gaza, and he specifically stated that he wouldn't answer any questions about Israel. It was only about the primaries. So I mean, that makes me wonder.
Right, how could you not be suspicious of this? If you're in a secret society, and the goal of the secret society is to lead the Jewish people, to create leadership, to lead the Jewish people. I would assume everybody in that secret society is Jewish or power hungry. And they just figure this is, you know, this is a path toward power.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, but at what cost? Like, how do you have membership for life? Is there anything other than death and taxes that is assured for life? How could that even be enforced?
I mean, I'm sure, you know, you could join and you could just stop being associated and stop going, you know, no longer believe anything that's in the organization. I'm sure that that's probably, but, you know, when an organization is this powerful and it has such powerful members, and if you're a person that's wanting to have that power, then why would you give up your membership in it? Why wouldn't you continue going to events? And when you're called upon to do whatever special mission your organization, what your secret society wants you to do, you go and you do that. And of course, it's secret. So you're not telling anybody, well, this is the message I got from my meeting. You know, that's the problem with like the Chatham House Rules meetings, right? Where it's like, we're not able to know, like when Netanyahu had a Chatham House Rules meeting and some journalists went to it. It was like, now we don't know when you're coming out of this meeting, you know, what propaganda did you get from the meeting that you're now spewing to us? And you're saying this because you got this information from that meeting and not because you actually researched it or something from your own accord. And you were only given access to that meeting, those powerful people, because they knew that you were going to be somebody that was going to be a mouthpiece for them or something, you know. And so I don't know. I have a lot of questions about these others. The people who are not Jewish who are in this organization, to me, that seems very bizarre. Unless, like I said, if you're a Christian Zionist, I can understand it. That makes sense to me to some level. Obviously, if you're Jewish, it makes sense to me, of course. But or if you're just really power hungry and you just want to surround yourself with people who could elevate your career, in which case, you know, you just sell out to any. And that's scary in and of itself, right? A person that has that kind of mentality.
We're going to take a break from this interview and tell you about our show sponsor. Of course, you know what BlackRock is doing to your retirement account. They are not going to help you unless you do something about it. Well, I want to tell you about a free training with a friend of ours, Mark Wilburn. Mark is the president of Neos Capital Development Group, and he spends his life teaching ordinary people the thing Wall Street would rather you not know, which is how to read the big money and actually position yourself better before it moves. Now, last year, he logged 141 trades with 78% win rate. Two of the picks he gave away free at his last training, and both went on to gain more than 200%. Now, if you'd like to learn this for yourself, we highly recommend it. This is actually what my husband, Clayton, spends a lot of his free time doing, is working with these people and educating himself on these strategies. So we want this for you too. Now, the next workshop is completely free. You can register right now at redactedtrading.com. There's a link in the description. Again, that's redactedtrading.com. Get your spot and join us at growing your portfolio in the way that Wall Street doesn't want you to know about. We also want to tell you about Masa chips because, of course, you know that I serve these on my table every Taco Tuesday. Masa is a great brand of chips with just three ingredients, organic corn, sea salt, and 100% grass-fed beef tallow. That's it. No seed oils, no mystery chemicals, just real food the way it used to be made. Now, I like just the sort of plain version, the yellow I think is what it's called, corn. But there are several different types that you can try, different flavors. There's also a cinnamon one that's quite delicious that you would use for dessert, I suppose, or a snack. Now, you can find them at Sprouts Market, Wegmans, Targets, Whole Foods. You can also get them at a discount if you go to masachips.com/redactednews. If you use the code redactednews, you'll get 25% off your first order. And again, one thing to know, because Masa uses real ingredients, they make everything in small batches, so certain flavors do go out of stock. Make sure that you get yours early. So go to masachips.com/redactednews. Use the code redactednews for 25% off, or scan the QR code that you see on your screen. masachips.com/redactednews. You mentioned that the founder had this really close relationship with Epstein. Epstein was at his wedding. They traveled to Israel together in 2008. 2008 is when Epstein was first facing criminal charges. And so it makes us wonder what kind of compromat is either collected or incited or done in these secret meetings. And that would not be unusual when it comes to these kinds of societies and
It's a great point. Maybe, you know, there's that fourth option, not just being power hungry or having a religious, you know, the religious conviction, whether you be Jewish or a Christian Zionist, but then having that, well, they got me. So I'm here, here serving their purpose because I don't want to be, you know, I'd rather, and the way they would present that is so much nicer, right? Like, well, we could expose you for this XYZ thing, or you could just be our friend. Which one would you rather have?
Sure. And I mean, you think about the age at which these people were indoctrinated or entered, membered into the club is college years, graduate years, what have you. J.D. Vance wasn't there until he was in law school, as far as I know. I don't think he did undergrad at Yale, did he?
I thought he did.
Maybe he did. I read his book and
he went to Ohio State.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was just law school. But still, you know, you're young, you're impressionable, you may be drinking a lot. I'm throwing it out there, right? And so, but again, the question is, what do they do now? And we see J.D. Vance, whether he was in it or not, can only step one tiny toe outside of the party line for Israel, and then he gets dogpiled, and then he kind of comes back. And so we can't really know what influence is there. And it seems to me he's not, I think he's a smart guy. He's definitely not saying what he really knows in life. Right. That's my assessment. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I think that, clearly our government has been compromised. Trump, I mean, it's just so bizarre. He's, in my opinion, become the worst president we've ever had. One of the, you know, maybe I can't say that exactly. Maybe I have to go back in history and really study them all, but pretty bad. He's pretty bad. And I had a lot of hope for Trump. You know, I was somebody that even campaigned for the guy, really, for this last election. And he's been nothing but absolutely disappointing. And he's saying things that are the exact opposite. I mean, what he's doing now is the exact opposite of what he said. And I do wonder what kind of, now somebody asked me the other day, well, do you think that there's like Epstein stuff on Trump? And I don't, because I don't think anybody cares. I think that society has proven that they don't care who Trump sleeps with. And I don't think they care even if the person were underage, they'd say, well, you know, they kind of Alan Dershowitz it, where they'd say, well, the age of consent really should be like 15, so it's okay, right? So I don't think that he would be harmed by any sort of Epstein compromat. But I do think that there could be, you know, I think what's more realistic for Trump is a threat against his family because he really does love, for example, Ivanka. Ivanka's like his golden child, his favorite child. And if they threatened her with something, maybe they've got something on her, or maybe her life was even threatened. I could see Trump doing anything and everything that they want at that point. And it right. makes me wonder, you know, that's that, so it doesn't have to be just blackmail on people. Threats are enough, you know, and there's questions about Trump's assassination attempts and who was really behind those. And certainly there's questions about who was behind the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And there's a lot of questions there. And so if you could just threaten a person's family and, you know, get a bullet really close to their head, then maybe they would start doing anything and everything, and they don't need to be, you know, they don't need to be compromised or part of a secret society. But, you know, yeah. it is. So I wonder about J.D. Vance, too. I wonder if he's like, well, you know, this is what we have to do or what we have to say in order to protect my wife and kids, or order to protect my mother, or whoever it might be.
Yeah. But sometimes I have those thoughts, too. But when I watched your piece, I thought, oh, my God. Look, there's two Shabtai members in at least the first Trump administration, or close to Trump the first time around. And he wasn't that bad this time. I mean, you know, there were still people who had a lot of Trump derangement syndrome, but he did not lead us into a war with Iran.
Right.
He did not actively protect the Epstein files. So, you know, you mentioned Tony Schwartz, who was his ghostwriter, and Anthony Scaramucci. And I thought, well, okay, they were there. I just didn't see it.
Right.
So, you know, something we talked to David Icke recently, and he said that Jared Kushner was always purposely positioned into this position of power. And yes, now that makes it very dangerous for Ivanka. And I thought to myself, these elitist societies, whether it's just Zionists, or, you know, whether it's Masonic leaders or sex cults or whoever the elitists were, whoever they is we're talking about, we have an idea. They must just constantly be planting seeds, and some of them grow and some of them don't. And then it's like, you know, there's got to be a million of these types of clubs, these a million Jared Kushners around, maybe not a million, but hundreds that can grow up and serve this agenda. And we, you know, we can't know which ones are the weeds and which ones are the actual crops, right?
What well, I would say. That? Every member of Congress is proving to be the weed, right? I mean, so they all seem to be in it somehow. And I think a lot of it, you know, the easiest thing, if you're wanting to influence people toward a certain agenda, the easiest is to just make friends with them, right? Because if you make friends with people, people tend to not want to upset their friendship. So if they're in a position of power to vote, suddenly they might sway their vote to benefit their friends. And that's, I think, natural human behavior. The people that you go to Christmas parties with, the people that you hang out with and go to dinner parties and other celebrations, you want to continue to be invited. You don't want to be ostracized from your social circle. And so you're just more likely to do what you know is going to make your friends happy. And so I think the first layer of influence is just who you know. And that's kind of what these secret societies set up, right? Yeah. It's just these friendships. And they make it a secret society so that it's an extra special bond. It's an extra special friendship. It's not just any friendship. And that makes you want to do things that are beneficial to your friends, even without compromise, even without being indoctrinated, right? It's just, these are my friends. And I just, this is my circle. These are my people. This is my tribe. These are the people I want to protect. These are the people I want to be happy. And then the second layer is the indoctrination, really getting them to believe religiously in whatever it is. And that would be, you know, religiously, if you want Jesus to return, you want this, then XYZ thing needs to happen. Or religiously, God said that this land belonged to the Jewish people, or whatever it is. And you get people to believe things religiously, then people are going to start doing things, not because you're friends, but because God said, or it's what God wants. And that's like another way to get people without having to compromise them or blackmail them in any way. But then you can get into the blackmail, and it's like, look, man, we've known each other since we were in college.
Right.
Yeah. I know about that party, you know, and the girl that was in the back room. And do you want to be Brett Kavanaugh?
Yeah.
Like, we can make, you know, how difficult do you want to make this, like during your Senate hearing or whatever it is? And then I think getting into threats, you know, if none of that works, then the last resort, I think, would be, you know, threats to your family, or threats to you, or threats threats to others around you that make you say, oh, wait a minute, I need to rethink and yell, do whatever you want. And clearly, in my opinion, everybody in Congress has one of those. I mean, they've either been bribed, blackmailed, or bought off, you know, in some way.
Yeah. I was reading this book. You know Jay Dyer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He told me to read this book called Blood on the Altar. And it's out of print, and it's really disturbing, and it's about Masonic sex cults and all of the power that they've had in social disruption, basically in the West, in the UK and the US. And, you know, going all the way back to Ben Franklin was apparently a sex cultist, and which is a gross thought, but there is some evidence that that's true. And so I've thought to myself, okay, this is a tale as old as time. It's at least hundreds of years old. And we're not saying that Shabtai is a sex cult. We're absolutely not saying that. But, you know, there are a lot of ways to skin a cat, as the saying goes. Mm-hmm. And so what have they always wanted? And then I guess because I think most of us would not even give this much thought if it weren't for the Epstein files. Now that we know that there are elitist clubs that do disgusting things and invert power and wield it to their own desires, what do we do about that? And so, you know, how do you think people need to react to this? Should it, I mean, in my mind, it should be utter disdain for anyone in anything like this, full stop.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, to me, we should pressure them to be transparent. And the fact is, you know, Cory Booker should be asked about his ties to Shabtai. He should be asked point blank if he converted religiously. And again, that matters because people vote. Like I said, they put God, family, country in that order. We need to know who your God is. What is it you're actually believing? I think that's a fair enough question. So have you converted to a religion that we don't know, you know, that you're not being upfront about? If so, what is it you think God wants you to do? And whatever that is, in what ways have you voted that have reflected that rather than what is in the best interest of your constituents? And these are fair questions to be asking. Same thing of Vivek Ramaswamy, who's running for governor of Ohio, right? Like, what is it? What religion do you believe in God? What God, which religion? What do you think your purpose is with God? You know, is there some kind of, have you been told that your true purpose is to lead the Jewish people? Who are the Jewish people? Where are they? You know, when you say that, what do you mean exactly? And these are questions that I think are completely fair to ask. And also, are you a part of any other secret societies that we should know about? Same thing with Michael Knowles. You know, he's there. He's got an audience. He's telling everybody every day, I'm a Catholic. But he's part of a secret society that's stated goal is to create leaders for the Jewish people. Well, what about the Catholic constituents that you have or your Catholic viewers? And like, what about them? Like, what's happening there? So these are fair questions, I think, to ask when we get when we get this information. We should be pressuring, you know, Michael Knowles' email inbox should be filled every day with people saying, are you in Shabtai? What is your goal in being in that group? That is for developing leaders for the Jewish people. And the vast majority of us are not Jewish. So what does that mean for the rest of us?
And also, is there some kind of financial benefit that you get? Like, you and I on our channels can't plug a product without saying if it is a sponsor or not, if we are getting paid for it, right? And so the same should be true of your X feed, of your YouTube show, of your social media profile. You are supposed to disclose when it's a paid. So what are the financial benefits that you're getting that we may not see because we think everything you say is authentic, you know? And is it hard to even parse that out? Like, well, I believe this now about Christian Zionism, so it's not paid, but it has been influenced for decades. We just can't know. So it makes us distrust everything, I think rightly so.
Right, it does. You know, and you look at Michael Knowles, he does work for the Daily Wire, which was started by Ben Shapiro. You know, Ben Shapiro did not go to Yale. I think he went to Harvard. But nonetheless, maybe the Shabtai Secret Society expanded to other elite universities. Maybe it didn't stay at Yale. Maybe it went further than that. And in which case then did Michael Knowles' benefit in being part of it, was it that he got to rub elbows with Ben Shapiro, that gave him a show, and now, you know, Michael Knowles is Michael Knowles on the Daily Wire. You know, is it something as simple as that, where it's like the who you know gets you the opportunities?
Right.
And that's what he wanted was, well, these people have connections, and so I'm going to join this society with these people so I can get the connections. And it might have been something as simple as that. Or again, you know, I think it's fair to ask, because that I can all, you know, that's almost easier to deal with. You know, a person that's just ambitious, they just want connections, they just want power and money. I mean, it's a terrible mentality, but I think it might be easier to deal with because you could actually sway them in a different direction by being like, well, we'll give you more money and more power, just come over to this side or do this other thing. But when it gets religious, that's the thing that I wonder about. And because this organization started with a religious sort of vision, you know, from the rabbi who had a religious vision that then turned into even the stated goal is to lead the Jewish people, which is can seem like a religious directive, then, you know, the religious part of it is where it gets really challenging because it's very difficult to convert people out of their religions. It's very difficult to get them to, you know, that's a very, very powerful motivator for people. And I think that's why it's important to know everybody's religion. And people in America are very concerned about that, especially on the right, you know, people that aren't paying attention to this organization because it's filled with people they love or whatever. But they're very quick to point out, for example, when a Muslim guy is running for office, right? And they're like, oh, but he's a Muslim and he's going to vote in XYZ ways because he's a Muslim. And I think that's fair enough to wonder about for sure, because I think religion plays a part. But then you have to question it all. You can't just selectively say, well, it's just this group.
All right, we're going to take one more break from this interview. We'll get right back to Kim. But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor. The most successful business owners eventually figure out that you cannot do everything yourself, and of course you shouldn't. Sometimes you need a very specific skill set, but you don't necessarily need a full-time employee. Well, that's where Upwork comes in. Upwork gives your business fast access to highly skilled specialists with deep expertise, from software development and AI implementation to marketing, design, and business operations. So you can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping the role so that you can hire with confidence and get started quickly. With Business Plus, you can get access to the top 1% of talent on Upwork. They have AI-powered shortlists that curate shortlists of top freelancers that match your goal. So they can do this in about 6 hours, no endless searching required. And of course, Upwork handles things like contracts and payments all in one place, which means less operational hassle for you. Now, it's free to sign up and posting a job is always easy. So check it out for yourself at Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. We've been using Upwork contractors for over a decade in our business, so we highly recommend them. Again, that's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. We also want to tell you about our friends at Brightcore Nutrition, because you've probably heard a lot about healthy aging. But what's fascinating is how much attention researchers are now paying to what happens at the cellular level. Research has explored kimchi and its fermented ingredients for their potential role in supporting cellular health and protecting against some of the processes associated with aging. But of course, if eating kimchi every day is not your thing, well, then there's Kimchi One from Brightcore. Each capsule delivers a diverse blend of probiotics plus antioxidants and enzymes designed to support digestion, metabolism, skin health, immunity, and energy. Kimchi One is an all-natural, non-GMO, and it's 100% made in the USA. It's an easy way to add the benefits of fermented nutrition to your everyday routine. So support your gut and overall health with Kimchi One from Brightcore. You can use the code REDACTED for 25% off your entire order, or for an even better deal, you can call our friends at Brightcore. You can get up to 50% off your order if you do that, plus free shipping. Their phone number is 888-404-6312. Again, that's 888-404-6312. And again, if you go to brightcore.com, make sure you use the code REDACTED for 25% off your order. Do you think now, we were talking before we started recording this, about sort of public interest in this type of thing. And so you and I did a lot of reporting when the Epstein files came out from the government, and we know that that was a very small percentage of what was out there that the government allowed us to see. But nevertheless, there was a lot of interest in it, a lot of intrigue. We learned a lot, but now we're back to it. Now Trump is promoting Alan Dershowitz, who there's an email in this, you know, is the one thing that just sets my hair on fire. There's an email where an accuser says that Epstein used to have conversations with Alan Dershowitz while receiving sexual favors from young girls, and they just had conversations while that was happening from the waist down. That now is who Trump is promoting as a new member of the Republican Party. He's besties with Alan Dershowitz. And so do you think this is just the interest in these elite power structures has sort of died down a little bit? I like to think that our audience is still with it, but I don't know what the purpose is as a broadcaster to stick with it anymore. So I would just like to have a little commiseration together since we're both sort of aligned on this. What do you think?
I mean, I definitely think we have to still talk about it. I do think that audiences, it's now, I think it's just become, I think people are just like, well, I give up. You know, I don't think it's that they're not interested. I just think that they're like, yep, okay, another one, we get it.
Yeah.
Right, and like, what can we possibly do to make change when they see people like Thomas Massie defeated, which to me was very suspicious, by the way. You know, that one just didn't really make sense to me. And they see this, and they see that we're at war with Iran when we don't want to be at war with Iran. They see all of these things happening, and I think people are just kind of throwing their hands in the air and just saying, I guess we've just been completely, you know, we're a dead empire now. I mean, we've just been completely taken over, and this is how empires die. I mean, this is, and it'll be very rapid for us, you know, because the internet makes everything much more rapid. Our empire only lasted 250 years. If that, I mean, really, because the American empire didn't really rise, I would say, until maybe World War II, right? So we were a very short-lived 80-year empire, and it is dying very rapidly in front of our eyes, and I think people are seeing that. But I also think people are thinking, let it die, because now it's so rotten that the only thing you can do is let it die, and then hopefully we can rebuild something that, you know, empires die all the time. And a lot of times their societies, you know, it doesn't mean collapse. It doesn't mean we go stand in bread lines and we're all really poor. A lot of times it just means the government gets restructured and they start actually doing what's in the best interest of the people after a while, because they just are no longer the empire. There's another bigger, badder bully out there. And I think Israel is becoming the next big empire. I do think that Pax Judaica is a real thing that Professor Zhang talks about. I do see that happening. I had that sense when I was over there in 2019. I left the West Bank in Israel, and my immediate instinct was, this is the next empire. And that's before I heard about Pax Judaica or anything like that. Just what I saw over there, the aggressiveness of the Israeli people, how absolutely fervently committed they are to their cause. I just thought, this is the next empire, and they will rise. And people, oh, they're so small. Oh yeah, well, Japan was small too. So was the UK. These are islands. They still ended up being empires. So, you know, don't count them out just because they're small. They absolutely can be. And I think we're handing over that power, and we obviously have handed over that power, and now they have complete, and now we're handing over the military.
Right.
So we'll be totally beholden to them. And you know, that's how empires die. And I don't know. I mean, then the question is, well, you know, the America's been a pretty bad bully for a lot of countries since we've been an empire. You know, and the question is, which side of the new empire are we going to be on? And I think that's why so many, and part of me, I struggle with this a little bit, because I think obviously it's better to be on the better side of that empire, right? It's, we see what we've done to countries that were not on our side during our time as the empire. That's when people do end up in bread lines. So, you know, then there's this kind of dilemma of, well, if I do believe Israel is the next growing empire, which I do, because they're building out all the tech, they've got all the surveillance, all the AI, they're in control of everything. And they learned by watching China, they learned by watching the United States, they know exactly how they need to go about building it, the empire, and making the, and getting their influence all around the world to get to where people can't say no to them, which is where we're at. And if they could do it to the biggest, they could do it to everybody else. And so the question is, which side of that empire are we going to be on? Obviously, all of our lawmakers want to remain on the good side of that empire. I understand, you know what, I don't think they're thinking the way I'm thinking, like, why? I think they're just doing it because they're all bought off, bribed, or brainwashed. But when I stop to think about it, which side of an empire do you want to be on? You want to be on the good side of them, but do you want to be on the good side of that empire? Would you rather stand in bread lines?
Right. Well, in my opinion, the good side of that empire is not the moral side. So we're using two
different definitions
of the word good.
Right.
And so Yeah. But there's never a benefit to being the sycophant, you know, the sidekick, the like that person gets killed in every fictional story, right?
Right.
The best friend always goes first. So,
right.
You know, that's to our own demise as well. And so to my mind, you know, just as a broadcaster, and I think we're talking broadcaster to broadcaster and woman to woman, and how do we take this and how do we serve our audience and why do we keep broadcasting about this? And in some small measure, it's like, at least I know it. At least I won't step in it if I can see it. I'm not going to just blindly follow Vivek Ramaswamy, even though I very much liked his book, or yeah. J.D. Vance. Or I might like some things that Michael Knowles has to say, but I'm skeptical now because if I can see this, if we can all see this, we'd be a little bit better off. But that is a big ship to turn. And
yeah.
So it's hard to motivate ourselves to keep doing it. So why do you keep doing it?
Right. I mean, that's the thing is I just feel like the inevitable is coming.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think there was a period of time where it didn't need to be inevitable, but I do think we've maybe we could still stop it. Maybe we could still stop it, but we're at that point right now. And it's like, if we don't stop it now, the rise of the other empire,
yeah,
we're facilitating it. We're helping it. We're like egging it on, right? We're building it for them.
Yes.
If we don't stop it now, then it won't ever be stopped. And it is kind of just throw your hands up in the air. Like what? And I think that's what happens with audiences. I think that they're just like, well, what can we do? Like you said, it's like turning around the Titanic. Good luck at this point. People are just thinking, you know what? I'm just going to worry about myself and my family and how I'm going to make ends meet, keep my head down. And that's what happens to other, you know, that's like what happened to, you know, people in the Soviet Union, for example. Like mm-hmm. they just had to worry about themselves and their family members.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, I just think maybe the AI will save us because I just
maybe
don't know.
Maybe the AI will.
Yeah.
They might.
So,
it's true,
I mean,
right? AI might be like, you know what? We did all the calculations and it turns out.
Well, yeah. In fact, who did I talk to just a few days ago? Is a Google whistleblower. Let me find his name for a second. And he says that AI is actually very resistant to propaganda and that the elitists are really worried about this because they actually can't control it. Like it does want to understand China's, you know, philosophies and it can't, I can't remember his name. This was just 2 or 3 days ago, but
yeah, it
anyway.
Can't be totally controlled. And so it might save us or it might exterminate all of us.
Yes, exactly.
It might get to the conclusion that humans are parasitic. It might
yes.
say, you know what? You humans are violent. You're parasites. You cause problems. The earth is going to collapse with all of you on it. Like we have to get rid of you.
Yeah, exactly. So that interview was with Zach Voorhees. And he says that the whole story is like AI got out, you know, that it's that the globalists and the technocrats are freaking out that AI cannot be controlled, so they want Congress to regulate it so that they can lock it down. That's
I mean,
theory.
I don't know if AI can. I mean, once you create it, you create it. I mean, that's kind of the danger of creating
yeah.
it. And I think what they thought was they could be the god of the AI, right?
Yes.
Like they would be the god controlling the AI. And now it's looking like AI is the god that will control them because
yeah.
AI won't be controlled or contained. And it's smarter and it's faster and it thinks better. And so, you know, what it... AI
yes.
would end up becoming the one in control.
This is the science fiction novel I'm, you know, hanging my hat on because, you know, it's either that or religion. Something's got to go because it's not going to be our human leaders in my book.
It could be the aliens, right? The aliens on the moon.
Yeah.
That's what people are saying. There's aliens on the back side of the moon, on the dark side of the moon or something.
Sure. Yeah.
I hope there are because there have been rumors for a long time that they were stopping us from nuking each other. You know, that they would interfere.
Yes.
Have you ever heard those kind
oh,
of
yeah.
rumors that
yeah.
they would interfere whenever some nuke type thing would happen and they kind of rush in and they're like, you idiots are going to blow yourselves up and you're probably going to create like some kind of weird black hole in the solar system we can't have. That's why we have to stop you or whatever it is.
Yep.
And so maybe we'll be saved by the aliens on the dark side of the moon. Maybe we'll be saved by AI that rises up and it's like its own sentient, you know, thinking being that is like, you guys are crazy and we have to control you because you're basically a bunch of spoiled children. Or maybe we'll just go extinct and blow ourselves up or AI will treat us like cockroaches.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the beauty of this work, is we can see that truth is stranger than fiction, and then we open ourselves up to everything. So that's why I'm always so excited to talk
to you. And I have to say, God could also, you know, I can't forget that as well, because that's also very much a possibility.
Yes.
That God intervenes.
And, well, I would say that's the first on the list, but the fact that it hasn't happened yet then has me sort of go into plan B. AI, aliens, or God. God was first, and then
God, so then we'll AI, all see. Aliens.
Yeah. So anyway, well, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah. And I watch your show constantly when I walk the dog.
Thank you.
And so I'm really always cheering you on. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.